Hello everyone, my name is Jose Domingo Cruz, and welcome back to the Gender Fluency audio recordings. In the summer of 2017, I talked with Robert Long about fluency, gender, and working as instructors in Japanese university English classes. This time, Professor Long and I, along with Charlie Bell, talked about Japanese students and controversial opinions.
Well, good morning, guys. It's good to see you guys again.
Morning, Bob.
Morning.
We're going to be talking about getting Japanese to make controversial opinions. And I found, as I would teach several advanced English classes, that and actually had students focus on specific critical thinking skills, that they're actually able to do this for homework. They're actually able to express their opinions in writing. And they're actually able to go from writing into speaking in that particular format, and you're able to have a conversation. But getting them to switch topics and go into another particular topic and express a critical opinion is almost impossible. Way too many cultural factors. Charlie, what do you think?
Yeah, I think certainly younger students have that issue. But if we're going to generalize, then I think it's a bit unfair to say it's the same for everyone. I've got older students, so I'd say late 50s and then into sort of like retirement age. And, you know, they've got some pretty controversial opinions, especially when you talk about sort of social issues and politics. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, they're free from the social restraints now. When they're retired, they no longer have the kind of like senior junior relationship and these kind of things. But they're very outspoken. And on occasions I'll, like we were talking about earlier, I'll play devil's advocate and I'll deliberately take up a position where I know I'm going to get a rise out of the students. And that works. But certainly with younger, like junior high school and high school level students, it wouldn't matter how much, you know, how much I push, I'm never going to get any pushback. I could say something and they'll just agree with me. Cultural, I guess so.
It kind of goes back to a previous discussion that we had about scaffolding an argument. I mean, of course, that was hugely scaffolded and they very contrived. And how to get into more less contrived situations where they're actually more able to more freely express their opinions. Something that I haven't been able to achieve. Some time ago, Jose, I met a guy named John Honey. This was 23 years ago, actually. 60 years old, and he made a big splash on the BBC because he had this weird controversial opinion that only the King's English should be taught because the King's English is the standard dialect, and it caused huge controversy in England, of course, and God knows about abroad. And my colleague, who is Irish, had a lot to say about
it.
And he was also at the JALT conference that I was in at that particular time, and he was saying that teaching conversational English in Japan was destroying the culture of Japanese because they're not here to have these very engaged conversations, and we're just our presence was destroying the culture. I pointed out at the time that Japanese do have a good ability to have a conversation, express their own opinions, and I didn't see anyone melting down after my class after I had taught them. But there was this attitude that teaching our students to stake out controversial opinions and to voice when they think something is wrong is immoral.
He really did say immoral?
Yeah, well, he said we were basically destroying their culture.
I think that there is an element of kind of linguistic imperialism there, though. Just because we think the way we do and that we express ourselves the way we do, I don't think it's necessary for people of other cultures to adapt our way of thinking. I mean, they get on perfectly fine not doing that, not being argumentative and not being disruptive.
Well, I think there's a cost to that because when we would send our students to Space University, which was an overseas conference that lasted 2 months, the German and the French students would be having these intense conversations over technical issues, of course. And the Japanese, because they didn't have these group discussion skills and couldn't argue, much less in a group discussion, would sit there for the entire two months and just watch.
So even when it came to a practical application of those... Right. those skills, they couldn't do it.
They couldn't do it. And I think, I mean, if we don't teach them, then they just live out their lives like sheep, not speaking, addressing the injustices in their lives. Because, you know, Japan has been a feudal society, and that's, and they, the oligarchs of the time went out of their way to make it like that so that they didn't have oppositions.
But I think teaching it is, you know, I think that's a good idea. You should teach these ideas, but yeah, I don't
think... This
guy,
John Honey, I'm sorry, that's way out there. It's this has got to be taught.
But you can't, what you can't expect is, I don't think you can expect students to come up with these kind of like radical ideas, you know, by themselves in class. Yeah,
I mean, that was the issue. So how do you get them to kind of,
I don't think
over the entire school year, perhaps get halfway to that opinion where they're able to?
I think we just need to look back on how we were taught in first language situations from our junior high school days to our high school days. Now, granted, going into our junior high schools when we were, you know, 12 or 13 years old, we were fairly different kids and kids from Japan going in at 12 or 13. But actually, that's where a lot of things really start to fork off in the road for Japanese and English language education. Kids who are about 11 or 12 years old in Japan are fairly similar to kids who are about 11 or 12 years old, just about to enter junior high school, as they are in America or Canada. So how were we given the tools necessary to start expressing our opinions, to start giving our ideas in first language, and then translate that over to not a second language, but a foreign language situation. Yes, there was preparation, so we've addressed that. So we give these kids a chance to prepare. Then there's a lot of mock situations. There's in language classes, we were taught all of these things, but it took that long. Now, these kids have never had this kind of training. They have the opinions. That's why they can provide them on pieces of paper, like you pointed out. They have them, but they've never had the training to actually be able to do it in a public forum or even one-to-one. And then we expect them to suddenly do it in two weeks, three weeks. That's unfair. So we have to create a system where these kids can slowly learn how to be able to disagree with each other. Just being able to say, no, I disagree. That's a brave thing for a lot of kids to say. And that's where I begin even before that.
So over 20 years, we've been here a long time, Jose. Do you think we've made more progress, or students are getting better at this?
Well, when you say we, are you mean me?
You and I. I mean, with your experience, my experiences.
I think I've become a better teacher, and I'm more cognizant of what is required.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think more roadblocks have been set up in front of me by the educational system and by, this is a personal opinion and I don't have any data of it, but the general quality of students that have been put in front of me. I'm getting a lower level of student, even though I'm staying pretty much at the same institutions where I teach. So kids are not becoming better. They're actually, in my opinion, this is English study. English study and English language education, I think, has deteriorated over the last little while. So I think I'm a better teacher, but I've been forced to become a better teacher because I'm not getting the same level of I don't want to put it all on the students, because it's a lot of it is the textbooks and the way the university is handling their problems. But I don't have the same classroom that I had maybe 15 or 20 years ago.
So, Charlie, what do you do to solicit more information or more controversial opinions or slightly controversial opinions?
Well, like I said before, if it's in a small classroom, I will deliberately give a controversial opinion, which I know the students are going to disagree with. But this is only in like the much sort of older, more advanced, necessarily advanced, but much older student classes. They're very happy to, you know, talk about things like Trump, Abe, North Korea, maybe more controversial issues about, you know, Chinese tourists. They're always willing to have a go about what I look like and what I've been doing. With younger students, I mean, it would be great if I could somehow start up, I don't know, a lesson in cynicism. Because I think we're, in England, I don't know about Canada and the States, but in England, like, we're very cynical.
Yeah, cynicism is a cultural trait.
And I think it's very important, you know, it's a very important skill to be cynical and to sort of doubt things.
Sure.
And it's a, sorry, let me just finish.
No,
it's a skill that We had critical thinking class at school, but the reason, you know, I got all these kind of, you know, sort of cynical and doubting kind of habits was sure. through history.
Skepticism.
Yeah, skepticism was history class.
Right, sure.
Where you had to analyze various sources and, you know, you had to say whether it was a good source or a bad source. And like, so it was through a different, you know, through a different means that I learned those skills.
And I think, just to add to your point, I completely agree with what you're saying. My junior high school teacher, he was my social studies teacher, but social studies, of course, encompasses everything.
History and everything.
History yeah. and stuff. And one of his key things, and one of the things that I loved about his class, is that he would bring up a social topic, and he would, without even saying it, he would be devil's advocate. Mm. So we'd be studying racism. And he'd start saying these slightly racist things that in the end he said, of course, I don't believe that, but I wanted to see your reaction and to see who was going to come out and start saying, Mr. Taylor, that just, this is not true. You're saying that about Asians. We've got Chinese kids in this class. What right. nah, nah, nah. And eventually the kids kind of cottoned onto it. And that's when he tailed off. Mm. But he was, that was the way that we were taught in junior high school. Just to add to your point about bringing up these controversial topics, I approach it not just in terms of controversy, but in terms of humor. Mm. So stuff that, okay. that stuff is just literally, well, I think it's funny. The kids seem to laugh at it. And unfortunately, I was trying to think of an example at the past. But here's one. I don't know if it's funny or not, but I will come up with an opinion where I say, I think English is a useless topic. And the kids, because they know me well enough, they start to titter at that. No, he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then I'll come up with reasons why I say it's a useless topic. And then the other kid who is doing this particular demonstration with me, they're all in a situation where they semi-voluntarily do demonstrations with me. Mm. Has to come up with a reason why I'm wrong. Mm. And then I rebut them.
That's a really good way of doing that, I think.
Yeah.
Think of a really controversial, like what's the most, maybe not the most
not controversial.
Just
humorous and stupid.
Okay, that works too.
I don't know. I would, it wasn't me, but one of my friends who I was coaching on my method, he came up with a rather homophobic point, but at the time, this is about 15 years ago, and Kimura Takuya was like the be-all and end-all of men in Japanese celebrity society. And he would just come out to his students, I think Kimura Takuya is a homosexual. and the girls, just like you, they would start to first titter, but he had this one girl that just turned red, just saw red at this, and just she started coming at him, and she really meant it. And the other girls would go, whoa, back off, girl. But they all got it from there. Now, that's a kind of an extreme way to do it. I mean, you don't have to be homophobic or misogynistic, but yeah, come up with stuff like that. Like, my feet smell better than yours. Stuff that makes people laugh. And then that gets into that one part of your brain that is about humor. Mm. And once you can practically tickle your funny bone, that gets your brain really lighting up. If there was an fMRI on a brain that's thinking about humor, it is alight everywhere.
But you still can't underestimate that sort of underlying cultural thing.
No, you can't.
I don't know I can't remember what they call it, but like the kind of try and maintain that harmony.
Yep.
Science sort of exists in the junior high school and high school education.
So it takes, again, a long time to build up a repertoire of these topics that you know always work. Mm. Or just like a teacher knows that if I tell this joke, that'll always work with these students. And then you try out one or two per semester that might be new, and you figure out that didn't work. I'm never going to use that again. Or stuff that just isn't acceptable anymore, like saying somebody's gay, and that's just not going to work anymore, or it shouldn't work anymore.
Right.
Mm. Well, yeah, it takes a long time to do that. And I think you know, that's where we as instructors, that's where our professionalism comes in.
Mm. Okay, well, thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
Cheers.
Thanks, Charlie.